In the bonus room, we get down to the nuts and bolts of being a successful ensemble, choosing repertoire, rehearsing for a tour, and finally we talk about a piece premiered the evening before our conversation, a new work by Anthony DiLorenzo for the Seraf Brass and Wind Ensemble. This podcast is brought to you by Dorico, the music notation and composition software from Steinberg.
Create music that moves with Dorico 5, the brand new version of the music notation and composition software from Steinberg. Packed with new features throughout the application, it's the perfect time to update from your current version or to try Dorico for the first time. You can start for free with Dorico SE or Dorico for iPad, which now allow projects with up to 8 players. Or step up to Dorico Elements, which now allows projects of unlimited size and features an expanded engrave mode. For professional use, choose Dorico Pro, which has many unique features you won't find in any other software. Visit www.steinberg.net/Dorico today and make more time for music.
How do you choose repertoire? Because you have a somewhat varied repertoire of, you'll do transcriptions and then you also do new pieces that have been commissioned for you. Do you do new music that's not commissioned or basically just commissioned pieces?
So we like to do a variety of different things that, the first thing is the commissions, commissioning new pieces and including that in our repertoire each season, whether that's a commission that we do on our own or through a consortium. And we brainstorm together and usually vote on a piece and or a couple pieces. And if we have time to read through them, that's always great as well. We usually do that in our summer sessions when we're preparing for the following season. And we have our classical favorites, the fun arrangements that we have been keeping in our repertoire over the years that we memorize, like Hungarian Rhapsody number 2 is one of them. And then also commissions, new pieces that we didn't commission, like works by Anthony DiLorenzo. We've memorized his piece Go. It's an audience favorite. We've played that since the beginning. We're also touring with a piece by Kevin McKee, Volta del Fuego, which we love. And then we each have a solo feature and we change those up because we don't want to play the same thing every year. So, we pick a piece that we love and find an arranger and we swap them out when we get a little bit bored with those or if we want to change. And does anyone have something to add? Or?
Well, I think it's important to us that to always make sure that we promote a new commission by a female composer or a person of color. I think that's always kind of an important aspect to our performance. So, but it is a lot of, it also depends on the venue or the show, the situation as well, like what kind of shows we'll do. Sometimes we'll do shows with intermissions, sometimes without, sometimes church, we'll have to, or Christmas shows. Mm-hmm. We might vary the repertoire at that point. But I think we found out that keeping the same kind of music every year and just switching out just a little bit every year seems to work best for us.
Yeah, and I would just say, I think we have two priorities as a group, and one is supporting underrepresented composers and music that maybe otherwise wouldn't be heard, and the other is keeping our audiences happy.
Yeah. Speaking of that, so here's a philosophical question, I guess, in a way, and that is, do you think it's possible for a brass group to make a living or to do what you're doing, playing all original music? In other words, no transcriptions. Mm. There are a few groups that do that, for example, American Brass Quintet, but they're not working all the time. And they don't want to work all the time. So that works for them. But I mean, if a group to be working as much as you do, do you think it would be possible to work if you just did original compositions or not?
I think if that's what the group wanted to do and was super passionate and driven, I am someone who thinks anything is possible. Mm-hmm. And if that was our vision, I think that we could make that work. We do love our classical transcriptions. I'm a person who loves variety, so I like the mix of both. But I do think it is possible.
Okay.
I think it is.
And in terms of representing, let's say, underrepresented women composers, so if you had a certain amount of money, you would probably rather commission 5 composers who who you really like, whose music you really like, as opposed to one very well-known composer who would take up that entire fee? I mean, that's a hypothetical question.
I'd like the five.
Yeah, I'd like the five different variations, to be honest.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, the world just always needs, we need more music by voices that we don't often hear, like people of color and women and the LGBTQ community, all of that. So, yeah.
And do you have people actually send music to you unannounced?
Yeah, I keep it all in a folder in our Serif Gmail so we can look through it here and there. And it's a lot. I try to keep track of it all so we can look at it. It goes in the queue for our concert research for future seasons. And it's a lot to keep track of. But we have a whole repertoire spreadsheet that I try to keep it all there. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like the group is incredibly organized.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I showed a friend in a string quartet one of our itineraries, and her mind was blown. She was like, I want this.
Really? Every hour of every day on a tour mapped out in the itinerary, including addresses, how long it takes to get somewhere. It's amazing.
And do you split that up, or is there one person who's basically responsible for that?
We split it up. It's I would say that me, Vicky and Christina are the main itinerary people because I think we just like to plan that stuff a lot.
I'm a little OCD when it comes to drive time. So if you're not in a car when I say get in the car,
she'll leave you.
I will drive off with the doors open.
Okay.
It happens daily.
It happens online.
Why are you always last, Rachel?
Guys, like, get in the car.
So, and I think also it's also really great because we do have a guest artist roster that we utilize, and this is something unique for our group. I know some other groups do it too, but not a lot. You know, instead of just having the same five on every tour, that's a scheduling nightmare. And so we've developed the system in our group where the core are required to do 80% of the concerts, and some of them are required because I'm upfront with the presenters about what they'd like, and some specifically ask, like, we want these five people there, and then people have to commit to that. And, or, if there's guests allowed, we allow two guests per concert. So we don't want to present a concert of like all guest artists. That would not be the group. But what's really great about that is we've made relationships with women who know the show really well, and they've become part of the Serif family. They memorize the tunes, and that's made, us be able to do other things. If someone gets called for a great opportunity, or, you know, Christina had an audition. I had a tooth emergency 2 weeks ago and had a really badly infected tooth. And so having someone come in and play my book had to happen. I had to figure out my tooth situation that week and get an emergency root canal. So having the guest artist roster list is really, really nice. And in the itineraries, the guests know everything that's going to happen each day. And I think they really appreciate that. So they're not like, what's going to happen today? They know it's all written in the itinerary.
Yeah, that's really good. So when you have, how much are you able to rehearse? I mean, I'm thinking when you have rehearsals, do you have some of the times differences and how you to resolve the differences in the group?
So before we start off every tour, we arrive one day before a tour begins. So for example, this month long tour, we arrive one day early and we do a rehearsal anywhere between 3 to 4 hours long. That 3 to 4 hours, everyone is required to be prepared with their own individual parts, just like any gig you would show up to. So we are mainly not running or learning music. We are probably just refreshing things and trying some new things out. So when the tour starts, it's just go time. It's go time for however long the tour is. Every now and then we'll do a sound check. Sometimes we won't have time to do a sound check based on the travel parameters. But when it comes to decision making, we'd like to take the rehearsal time before a tour to try something new. Or if something wasn't working on a previous concert, we try to figure out why did that not mend as well as it should have, or this was a little intonation was out. And we try to explore ideas or different music approaches to a piece that we're too familiar with, that we get too stagnant with, and try to really emphasize all the changes in the music to really make it special for us and the audience. So making sure that we're really still diligent with dynamics or making sure that our memorized pieces are not just memorized by notes, but memorized by the delicacy of and the perfection of detail to make sure that it's as perfect as it is by memory, as if we were playing with music. And when it comes to maybe disputes about how something should be phrased, the rule is that you have to try what somebody says. The group has to try it at least once, try it the other way, and then we can all agree, put a vote. All right, well, we all liked it this way. And so thankfully, in a group of five, there's always a majority.
The first group I played in was the Fine Arts Brass Quintet, and that's how we did it. If we couldn't resolve it by just talking, we'd take a vote, and with no abstention. So it would be at least 3-2 or 4-1.
Yes.
So, you know, talking about trying to be playing a piece that you play a number of times and essentially trying to be fresh with it to have a slightly different approach. A person I just recently interviewed, Rachel, was Amy Sanchez, who's a horn player from Los Angeles. And we were talking about Vince DeRosa. I don't know if you know that name or not. He was a phenomenal studio player in Los Angeles. Just died, actually, I think maybe about 6 months ago at the age of, I think, 101. And I actually had a couple of lessons with him, and he was fantastic. But I had heard a story about him, and I asked him about this story, and that was many years ago when Eric Leinsdorf was the conductor of the Boston Symphony. He was in Los Angeles for some reason and did a recording of Scheherazade, and there's a really difficult exposed horn solo in Scheherazade. And for some reason, they had to do 17 takes of that because of other things. And every take, DeRosa played it perfectly. And Leinsdorf supposedly offered him the job to come to Boston. And DeRosa said, I'm very happy in Los Angeles. Thank you very much. And so when I had a couple of lessons with DeRosa, I asked him about that, if that was true. And he said, yes. And he said, what was really difficult was each time to play it a little bit differently. And I thought that was such a great approach, you know, to music, to not just have it be one thing, but to constantly be changing. So with that in mind, how has the group changed over the years? Oh, Rachel, you were going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, like, we all know our music so well that I'll throw a curveball at him sometimes. I'll play something completely different. And I know that no matter what I do, they know their parts so well, they're not going to get thrown off by it.
Yeah.
They'll be like, what? but they know basically, you know, what they're supposed to do. And I can throw in a trill or like a flutter tongue and be like, oh,
okay. Speaking of curveballs, which brings us to baseball, Gene, one of the other trumpet players, I noticed that she sang the Star Spangled Banner for the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox. And it's too bad she's not on this interview. I would have loved to have asked her what that was like. So
I sang the national anthem for a professional hockey game, the Admirals. Yeah, when I was in middle school.
and you still remember it?
8,000 people were there, and I had a voice crack on the high note. But other than that, it was great.
And they applauded afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Well, how has the group changed? Mary, you might be the best one to answer this. How has the group changed and matured through the years? If you compared the group now artistically, not in terms of jobs, number of jobs, but artistically now, as if you compared it to maybe the first, second, or third year.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've always had great players. And I think that now what's changed is people really wanting to be in the group long-term versus just coming on for a job. And everyone's been a great person and a great player. But now that we've had auditions, which, you know, again, we had built up income to be able to afford auditions, to do a search, to do interviews, and really get to know, why do you want to be in Seraph Brass rather than just calling someone as if it's just a gig, you know what I mean? And I think that's really helped find people who really want to be in this group. And I just find it really nice, you know, before we felt like maybe a sound check was like annoying for some people. I'm just guessing. But now we can be super tired and come to a sound check. And sometimes I still get a little worried. I hope people are okay with the sound check. And then I'll hear from Vicky, like, we need to do this bar to this bar because this is not quite together. Let's change the sound here. And I'm like, wow, we're like, we're all wanting to improve even when we've had a rough day of driving. So that's the biggest change that I've seen artistically, is just the growth mindset is, everyone's on the same page now with the growth mindset of wanting to improve every show. And that's really cool.
And so you seem very organized. If you, I don't know if you've thought this or not, but if you had to look 5 years down the road or 10 years down the road, have you done that? And what would your idea be?
I would like to see all of the admin work divided up equally. We're still on that path and it's getting better and better. Like, I think we're still trying to find out like who does what job exactly. And like, I don't want to do more concerts. I want to do, keep it. I don't want to go more than what we have, but I want to do more. I want to do more international things and more of the high-end series and like where we go away for like 4 days. And if we do any longer tours, I'd like to see that happen in Europe, in Asia. That's what I would like.
Mm-hmm. And maybe when you're playing with top ensembles already, but maybe in the future playing with big orchestras.
It would be great to be concerto soloists with symphonies and wind ensembles. Now that we're starting to do that more, that is something that we really, really enjoyed doing this weekend.
So let's go right to the present, or almost the present, which was last night. You had a concert with Pershing's own wind ensemble. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yes. So the piece was by Anthony DiLorenzo Camara. And we first did the piece with orchestra. So it was going to be a unique experience for us to do it with wind ensemble. And I think we had one of the best wind ensembles in the country to play with. So the colors were very cool. So we performed this yesterday, the premiere of the wind ensemble with brass quintet version, and we're going to record this piece, finish the recording on Monday. And it's just been, exciting. It's still an exciting time right now. And I think this piece actually, will get a lot of, exposure. I think I can see other quintets wanting to do this piece, university faculty quintets wanting to do this piece. It's very accessible. It sounds great. And I think it's going to, hopefully we can see a lot of people starting to perform this piece.
And he was there, Tony DiLorenzo was at the concert?
Yes, yes. And he'll be at the session tomorrow as well.
Wow, that's great. That's great. And then this is part of sort of like a tour right now. You have a few more dates and you're playing in California next, I see.
Yeah, so we have 2 weeks left.
Yeah. 15 days.
We're halfway there.
15.
We're
halfway. We've hit halfway. For some of us, we've been on tour already for 15 days.
Well, thanks very much for this. It's been really great to meet some of you for the first time, meet some of you again, and to hear your story, because it's really inspiring. And you're doing great work and great concerts. And keep it up and keep going forward.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Thank you.